It's happening today. We're talking about it now. Join us, 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. So yesterday, Governor Lamont decided that he would extend the emergency orders, which were due to expire on September 9th, to February 9th, an additional 5 months. And the process by which he can do that means that when he signs that order, which is anticipated to be today, there will be 72 hours for a so-called committee of 10, 6 Democrats and 4 Republicans to decide if they will do nothing. If they do nothing, then the emergency orders automatically go into effect, is my understanding. If they decide to meet and reject it, well, then I'm not exactly sure what will happen. But in any event, Vince Candelora, who is a presumptive Republican leader in the next session and an active member and also a member of the conservative caucus within the Republicans, is among many signatories this morning to a formal letter opposing Governor Lamont's intention to extend his emergency powers. I wanted to ask Vince Candelora back on the show to explain exactly why he opposes this, and I invite your comments and questions as well at 203-333-9422. Hello, Vince. Hello, Representative Candelora. Thank you so much for being on the show at such short notice.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about why you feel so strongly that these emergency powers should not be extended.
Sure. So, you know, there's two powers that the governor is exercising right now. One is via public health emergency, which I do support. The second is a civil preparedness, which really points to sort of man-made disasters, things of that nature. And I think that now that we've gone through the pandemic, we have a plan in place to protect public health. I think we should be continuing some of those plans, but I'm concerned at the broad authority that he is attempting to continue to exercise under the civil preparedness statutes. You know, it's an extraordinary power. It allows him to amend, modify, repeal any statute on our books. And so as we've seen, you know, in the beginning, he suspended rent payments, he suspended evictions, he closed down the courts, and I'm concerned that we are going to potentially go another 5 months without people able to having redress in the courts, without being able to process their permits and applications. I think those conversations need to occur of to what extent he is going to continue to interfere with private contract, which I think is far away from the public health issue. And when are we going to allow landlords to begin collecting rent again? When can the housing courts open up again? When can family courts open up again? Those type of issues, I think, need to start to be addressed. And what say does the General Assembly and the public have in this process? He really has run everything behind closed doors without a lot of conversation and transparency. And I think we need to bring some element of transparency back. You know, we are not in an emergency situation anymore.
And I really think that that's the critical piece. So let's talk about what we mean by the word emergency. It seems, I mean, I think that, you know, when you focus on that, we're chatting with Representative Candelora at 203-333-9422. 2020 hindsight is what it is. And frankly, I think Governor Lamont gets altogether very good marks for grappling with this in the emergency in a way where I'm always about the proof of the pudding, cliche as it is, but we're able to have this luxurious conversation because we have widespread testing that's easily available, because we have less than 0.5% or more or less around 0.5% with occasional outbreaks here or there, but more or less growing, you know, a steady and declining rate within Connecticut's overall population of COVID. So when we talk about an emergency, even a public health emergency, I think it's fair to ask, are we still in a public health emergency vis-a-vis responding to COVID? Because remember, it was an emergency because it was a novel disease and we thought our hospitals would be overwhelmed, and for a while they were. Are we still in that emergency?
Yeah, and I would say based on the metrics, we are not. Our hospital capacity is somewhere around 4% right now, which means we have 96% capacity for COVID if needed. We are able to contract trace. So despite having the outbreak in Danbury, you know, we're able to contain it by tracing who those individuals were in contact with. We have large capacity for testing. So all those measures are put in place. Plus, I think we've already identified some of the activities that could encourage spread, you know, the public transportation, large gatherings. Those areas have been regulated, and, you know, people are wearing masks, and so we're keeping it down under control. What I'm starting to become critical of, you know, in particular, the governor has decided to forego rent payments through October 1st, so people still don't have to pay their rent. What does that have to do with public health? The unemployment system was robust for people to collect. People have gone back to work. We need to allow the private industry to begin operating again in those areas. Otherwise, we're going to see, you know, mass foreclosures. I'm very concerned of what is happening to our rental property and our rental industry because of this type of power that's being exercised. You know, the governor could come in and change election laws before this election in November.
Well, he did it the day of. I'm sorry, it was the day of the primary where it actually was changed, where, you know, originally you had to have your ballot in by that Tuesday. And then literally the night before they said, no, the ballot could come in by Thursday.
That's correct. And, you know, because most of those primaries, you know, were ceremonial, it didn't matter as much. But if he starts changing general election laws, we are going to see a constitutional crisis. I think you're going to see lawsuits. It's going to disenfranchise voters. So we need conversation of, Governor, to what degree are you going to start tinkering with our statutes? And if we extend this civil preparedness, he has unfettered control over all our laws. And, you know, as a legislator that was elected to represent my people, I have a concern giving him another 5 months of that broad authority.
So, Vince Candelora, procedurally, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm reading this from various newspapers, but my understanding is that this is not something that the general legislature, even at this point, gets to vote on. Only a committee of 10 get to vote on this. And they don't have to vote on it. They have to confer to decide if they're going to meet to vote on that. Is that correct?
That's right. It's sort of deemed approved otherwise.
And let me ask you this. There are 6 Democrats. There are 4 Republicans. Is this something that you think will fall along party lines, or do you think not necessarily?
In my guess, I do. I think that Democrats are, you know, they are in the majority. They're not taking any heat for the decision making because it's all on the governor's lap. So I think they're more than happy to continue to allow the governor to have that authority and avoid making the difficult decisions. And so I don't anticipate Democrats would go along with us to say we need to stop these powers. You know, I do think it merits a conversation of, again, to what degree should the governor be exercising these powers? And I think we need to be going through looking at these executive orders and saying, okay, what can go away? You know, what do we need to continue from a public health perspective versus an economic one?
I understand. Well, and again, I mean, we're in a democracy. If it's not an emergency, then what's the rush? We should have a debate about it. We should.
That's right.
Now, in terms of the mask wearing and the gathering, you're saying that's under public health. That's not something you're opposing.
No, I think you could make a strong argument. You know, outdoor gatherings seem to be okay, but I think when you have large gatherings inside, I think there's merit to there being a concern. And so I think that conversation falls under public health, and I do support the measures that were put in place to prevent that. You know, I wear a mask wherever I go. If it doesn't help, you know, no harm done to me. If it does help, then that's great. And I think Connecticut's metrics have been very good, and so we should keep doing what we're doing as a society. But again, I think that the governor, his authority needs to be reined in because, you know, I think he's exercised too much authority throughout this process. And some of the decisions he's made have gotten away from public health decisions and have been, you know, political ones or ones that a special interest group will get in front of him and ask for something and he grants it. And I think that's not appropriate. And to the extent that that dialogue occurs, it should be done in an open forum so people understand what is behind these decisions.
So what happens if these powers get extended through February 9th and this conversation sort of goes away after 72 hours? I mean, is there any recourse for the legislature as a whole? Is there going to be any kind of calling for a special legislative session? In other words, I guess what I'm asking is, if you're in the minority, is that it? You just get to voice your opposition and you have to sort of go away with your tail between your legs? Is there no sort of, I don't know, meeting across the aisle with enough people to say, let's at least have a conversation about it? We may get outvoted on the final vote, but let's meet and talk about it.
Yeah, I think there's merit to that. And I think if we go into special session, we will have that conversation. Part of the problem is the way these statutes are written. It's extraordinary. And so regardless of whether we're in the minority or the majority, as a legislature, we have very limited power. And I think what we would have to do is go in and change those underlying statutes that gave him unfettered power. When you look at the civil preparedness thresholds, you know, it really sort of contemplates an invasion, you know, whether it be in the middle of a war where somebody comes and bombs Connecticut. That's the type of, I think, issues, man-made disasters that the civil preparedness statutes created this extraordinary power for. And I think the governor is really pushing the envelope by utilizing this pandemic in order to invoke these civil preparedness powers.
And Yeah,
the precedent's been set. And because of that, I think we need to take a look at that statute in general and narrow it down, because I just don't believe he should be exercising these extraordinary powers.
So let me ask you this, and it may be something that the courts refuse to decide as a political question, but if there is nothing that happens, in other words, if this committee of 10 doesn't meet, and therefore because they don't meet, these powers get extended until February, is this something that members of the Conservative caucus are going to be willing to bring to a judge?
I think, you know, you've already seen pockets of cases being brought on various issues of these executive orders. But I think generally speaking, there would be probably not just members of that caucus, but members within the General Assembly and the general public who would be interested in having a court weigh in on to what degree these civil preparedness statutes should be invoked and can be invoked. So that may happen. Of course, it costs money and resources. Mm-hmm. And so people are reaching their breaking point. So I'm concerned, you know, at what point are people going to say, I have to go all in and spend the money in a lawsuit because I'm losing my livelihood because of these powers?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting with respect to the landlord and tenant. The truth of the matter is it really is a shifting of risk, right? I mean,
that's right.
It's very easy to sort of broad stroke and say, well, landlords have very deep pockets. But in actuality, many, many don't. There are many people who are in the role of landlord who own one or two or maybe more than that, maybe 5 to 10 units. And that's how they make a living or that's how they create some extra income. But they have mortgages like everybody else. And just because you're a tenant doesn't necessarily mean that you can't afford to pay. And so sometimes we have these knee-jerk responses as a society wanting to be compassionate. And certainly in the short run, I understand that compassion. I don't think anybody objected to it. We cratered so quickly. The numbers were staggering.
Right.
But I know that now it's 5 months later and it's a different situation for many people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the flip side of this, a lot of tenants may not pay anything at all. So they're going to end up in court. They'll be evicted. They're going to have a judgment against them for the rent. And then they're going to have their credit affected. And so they may be just as bad off in the long run as the landlords. So who are we protecting? There's also a situation. I had a Connecticut resident. I heard their story. They reached out to us, and they were moving back from California. Their house was rented. The tenant was supposed to get out on March 31st. They have a son that is seriously ill, has significant medical issues. They arrive at their home to move in, and the tenant says, I'm not leaving, and I don't have to pay your rent. And these people have been living on friends and family's couches for the last 6 months, and they can't get back into their own home because of the governor's order. And so it's not just about landlords. We're denying all of these people the court system and a right of recourse. And to me, that is really significant. And I think the general public should be scared, because it may not affect you today, but one of these orders that he decides to put down can affect you tomorrow. And unless we have open and transparent conversation, and I think the governor needs to appreciate the impact of these decisions. And frankly, when you have six people in a room making a decision, I'm not sure they do appreciate the impact. They need to start hearing these stories. And so that's what we want to start talking about.
Thank you very much. I mean, this is, you know, Vince Candelora, this is one of the problems that the framers of our Constitution, the people who thought long and hard about democracy and checks and balances, they were very afraid of this. And I'm not accusing Governor Lamont of being any kind of a dictator, but the seizing of authority, whether it be on a first selectman or a mayor or a governor or a president, the seizing of authority that was already granted originally consensually by the people by voting someone in has always been a danger in any society. And a pretext for seizing authority has always been a danger in any society. I don't think we're accusing Governor Lamont of pretextually of making it up when he needed to respond in a crisis in March and April. But the giving back of the power that was seized is an issue in every democracy, among every leader, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. And we the people have to be really careful and tight on those reins. So I thank you for coming on the show today, Vince Candelora. I'm going to be following this story with great interest. If there's a sequel, if this thing comes and goes without a murmur, and there's a follow-up, whether it be a lawsuit or whatever, I'd like you to come back on the show and keep this in front of the people. Thank you for coming on
the
show today.
I'd love to come on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Representative Vince Candelora, we'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show at 203-333-9422.